are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Your host, Brian Peacock, with you once again. We're going to take a break in the wall-to-wall training camp coverage here. My guest today is Oscar Aparicio of Better Rivals Podcast. A lot of you I know already listen to the Better Rivals Podcast, so you're familiar with Oscar. He and David Newman really bring the information and the knowledge from a scheme and X's and O's standpoint. So we're going to talk to Oscar about some of those things and some of the fits for the 49ers in Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh's offense and defense for the 49ers in 2018. I do want to remind everybody to subscribe, rate, review the show. We're on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are everywhere that you can find podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Hit me up in either of those places if you'd like to get involved in some more of the mailbag segments that are coming up this week and coming up every week on Locked On 49ers. And now let's bring on today's guest, Oscar Aparicio. He is one half of, actually, I take that back. Now I believe he is the entirety of the Better Rivals Podcast, which is the Niners Nation official podcast. And he and David Newman, who also is a friend of the show, do a great job over there, and X's and O's are their specialty, so I want to talk a lot about that with him today. Oscar, welcome once again to the program.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So first off, I just learned today about David Newman's moving on to Mr. Fancy Pants over at PFF, right? And so he's no longer going to be with you on the podcast. Is that right?
He is, man. He's moving on up. He got a full-time gig at PFF. He's been working for that for a while, and he's a full-time football guy now, so I'm really, really happy for him. It's a fantastic move, and it's exactly what he wanted, but it means that he couldn't do the Better Rivals podcast anymore, which is, it was a little expected, but at the same time, it still kind of sucks. We're still obviously really good friends, and so I'm not too worried about friendship, but the podcast will still march on. We've got division previews going on over the next month, so we'll be interviewing some bloggers from the other SB Nation sites and some other friends of the pod, and then we'll move on to the season, and by that time, hopefully I'll have another compatriot in arms for the 49ers podcast.
Are you having any sort of a contest to find your new cohort over there?
Yes, it's a cage match, and it's going to be a tournament style. Round one is all going to be like the best Jimmy nickname, and you can't use anyone that's already been used. So you can't use GQ, you can't use Jesus, you got to become original, come correct with your nicknames. And then after that, it's going to be a Shanahan formation quiz.
Oh,
so you tell me, you know, all the different formations in Shanahan's own language, and then we're going to go to individual, you know, kind of player swaps, you know. So what's the zebra? What player does that swap? And then if we need to, we'll go to protections. We'll go to like Jet, Scat, and that kind of stuff.
So, wow. No. That's going to be rough. I think you will find exactly zero people who can pull that off. I don't know if I could repeat one of Kyle Shanahan's calls if you just said the whole thing to me and asked me to repeat it back to you.
Man, I don't know that I could either. They get pretty complex. I feel pretty good when I can identify formations, when I'm like, oh yeah, I think I know what that one is. It doesn't help that I don't have my hands yet on a Shanahan playbook. I've got his dad's playbook, but I don't have a Shanahan playbook yet. So if you're out there and you're listening and you have one of his Atlanta playbooks, if you have a Niner playbook, slide into my DMs is all I'm saying.
Absolutely. And if you give it to me, I'll take a look at it and definitely pass it Oscar's way. And by the way, big ups to David Newman. That's awesome to hear. He's doing that full time. That's really cool. But it sucks that you got to find a new person to work with, because I think you guys had a pretty good thing going on over there.
Yeah, we did. We've known each other for a while now, and we've been doing the show for 6 years together, which is, wow. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's longer, I think, than my, that's longer than I've been together with my wife, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, David Newman's basically my work wife.
She hasn't started to work with PFF, has she?
No, okay. She hasn't. She's not allowed to. She's got a non-compete.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Smart. Very smart. Yeah. 6 years ago, podcasts were still somewhat in their infancy. I remember going to broadcasting school, and people even there didn't know what podcasts really were very much in like 2006 and 2007. I actually taught what podcasting was to our class, because me and a couple of the guys that were doing a radio show
and started doing a podcast thing on Podomatic, I believe it was at the time. And,
oh, I remember that.
Yeah, do you remember that? And so we had to like teach the class because the professors didn't even know about it. That's how much that's how this has come along, and now it's like a marketable thing.
Dude, I started a podcast for the 49ers Web Zone in 2008, and back then it was a solo endeavor, and I did the whole thing with a snowball mic and GarageBand, and it was me all by my lonesome, and it did not last very long, as I'm sure you can imagine. But it was a good learning experience, and I think I learned quite a bit. And then when we relaunched it a couple years later as the Better Rivals podcast, I think it was a much better product.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that Kyle Shanahan offense a little bit. And first, I mean, I got to ask, are you excited for year two of Kyle Shanahan's offense, or kind of bummed that you didn't get to study up on yet another new 49ers scheme for what, like the fourth straight year?
Yes, it was. It would have been the fourth new scheme, basically, over the course of the season. We've had our good cadence over the course of the offseason show where we're like, all right, new coach. We've got three episodes about a coach search, and then we hire the new coach, and then we've got at least four episodes of studying their scheme. And this year, we got to dive a little bit deeper in Shanahan's scheme specifically. And we always do a scheme month or a smart football month, which is what we did this year. And this year, because we didn't have to dive so deep into a scheme, we got actually more into the analytics side of things. So we had a couple of episodes where we talked about wins above replacement and expected points against, and some of the underlying math that made those statistics worthwhile. And we knew that we were going to be talking about those over the course of the year. So we thought, why not actually spend the offseason to dig deep in those stats that you're going to hear throughout the year, but may not have the time to actually understand at a real deep level. So that was fun this year. We got to broaden our horizons and do something we didn't do. We wouldn't normally get a chance to do because we're too busy studying another offensive system.
Right. Yeah. Just like Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, and the 49ers roster gets to dive into something deeper for year two. You got to do that this year on your podcast. I don't know if you could even upgrade more from schemes from year to year than the 49ers did. Chip Kelly's nonstop crossing routes. It was like, oh, mesh concept again. I bet they weren't going to expect that. I had actually worked with David doing some PFF stuff, and the Chip Kelly season was when I was charting routes for the 49ers. And I was like, this is ridiculous. This is insane. And plus the talent level wasn't very high on that team either on offense. So that was a rough season. So going from that to Kyle Shanahan, then on the other side, Jim O'Neill, who literally wasn't sure what was happening a lot of the time.
What the hell just happened?
That famous clip I love from him. And he's like, yeah. I was like, what just happened? He's like, yeah, we are one of the same thing. What the hell's going on out there? So from that to all gas, no brakes, the violent play fast style of Robert Saleh's defense, which I love, giving guys a lot less to think about and just go play fast. Both with how effective these schemes are and aesthetically more pleasing these schemes are. Could you upgrade more than the 49ers did?
I don't really think you can. And I find it interesting that the philosophies of the coaches seem to have flipped from one regime to the other, because Chip Kelly, his offense was predicated, really, I think the failure of the Chip Kelly offense was that he really needed pace to help make his offense go.
Yeah.
And he could do that in college in a way that he couldn't do in the NFL. And he just didn't adjust. NFL defenses are incredibly smart, and the players are smart, and they're able to recognize and diagnose things that the college players just can't do. And so you get to a place where I don't think that the things that Chip Kelly did were inherently bad. His offense was not gimmicky. He ran a lot of what people would call, traditional football plays, like the inside zone. And he ran mesh, which was a West Coast concept from Bill Walsh. So these are not concepts that are gimmicky or collegey. He just didn't string them together in a way that made sense for the NFL. Because in college, he used pace to string them together and obscure some of the things that that defenses were able to pick up on. And then on the flip side, Jim O'Neill had this overly complicated defense that asked for his players to do a lot of different things, and they had to think. And then on defense, if you think and you pause, well, the offense is blown right by you. Now you basically have those roles reversed. And Robert Saleh has a very simple defense in the scale of defenses. And it's a straight up cover three. It's not overly exotic. It's not overly crazy. But because he's got talented players and because he wants them to play fast, then it works. And I think that works a bit more on defense as a philosophy. You can work with talent in a way that you can't just do that on offense. On offense, you have to rely on scheme. And Kyle Shanahan is, from a schematic perspective, one of the, I would say, he's definitely a top four coach. I would argue that he's top three up there with probably Andy Reid and Bill Belichick.
It's like, and it's one of those things too, where you're sort of in awe of it and you hear him talk. And so a reporter will ask a question, and just the way that Kyle Shanahan answers those questions. And sometimes like he doesn't like coach speak it either. And I'm like, okay, yes, I love this. I love this answer for me, because I really want to know the real answer to this question. And he's like, I don't remember who the reporter was. I think it was last year that asked him a question. It was sort of like, you know, kind of a backhanded dig at him maybe. And he gave the most straight up answer. And it was like, oh my God. Okay. Yes. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it. And I love that. Like, in full control of what's going on.
Well, what's funny is I think coaches are overly paranoid in a way that they don't need to be. There's a great article a couple of months ago about sign stealing in college and about how that extends into the NFL, and how it's not as prevalent in the NFL, but it absolutely does happen, where you have someone watch the TV tape to steal calls, to steal signals, to get tendencies from what you can hear picked up on the TV mics. And coaches, for whatever reason, feel like they have to super guard that and be hush-hush about it, when some of the greatest content, I think, for fans and to make us educated fans, it actually helps everyone all together, and you're not really giving anything up. The Eagles, I think, do a great job of this, because they have their coaches do like an Eagles chalkboard, and they have their coaches actually walk through a lot of the strategy and the decision-making points, and they post those videos online, and they're great, and I've learned a lot from those videos.
Yeah.
I think Kyle has a very similar approach. He's going to be open and direct. And he's oftentimes said, I can't get into that part of it because that would be giving away a trade secret. But as long as I'm not giving away a trade secret, you can find this stuff on the internet. It's not anything I need to hide. And so I think that's a matter of treating the media and fans with respect, and not trying to be this kind of like, I'm going to hide things because I need to hide things, and that gives me some kind of competitive advantage. I think Kyle is confident in his ability to out-scheme you, even if he tells you that, you know, the coaching point on, you know, with a blaze route is going to be, you know, basically a hitch from inside the numbers, and that's a compliment to a post route because they have the same stem. Like, a defensive coach knows that.
Right.
He's just going to know when it's going to get called on him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I remember those Philadelphia Eagles. Was it with Fran Duffy? And I think they did that with Chip Kelly, too. And I learned a lot about what Chip Kelly was trying to do after he got hired with the Niners, watching some of those videos. Those were pretty cool.
Yeah, no, Fran Duffy does fantastic work. He is really, really good at breaking things down in video form, and they've continued that with the current regime. And John DeFilippo, he did a couple of really good videos while he was with the Eagles. And so overall, I think that's the kind of stuff that I like that comes out. It's trying to make fans a bit more educated about the game they're watching, and not just explaining platitudes for platitude's sake.
Is there anything year two with Kyle Shanahan that you're looking for? So like some improvements, or maybe something you saw that, okay, they can do more of this, or is it more like, okay, they're on this graduate level offense, I'm just kind of going to sit back and wait and just excited to see what they do now in year two?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think the first thing that comes to mind is going to be the red zone performance. They weren't super great in the red zone last year. And you have to remember that there's, of course, pre-Jimmy and post-Jimmy. And even post-Jimmy, their red zone offense sputtered every now and again. Now, generally, good offenses are also good in the red zone. But there are certain things that you can do in the red zone to make your offense a bit more efficient. Chip Kelly, believe it or not, in his one and only year in San Francisco, had a top 10 red zone offense based on DVOA. And the Niners still haven't done that. I expect that to get a little bit better, especially now that they have a couple of key red zone targets. I think George Kittle is going to be a fantastic red zone target. I also think Dante Pettis is going to be a really good red zone target because of his ability to separate on the line. When we broke down his college tape, when we were after he got drafted, we targeted him as a draft pick for the 49ers because of his ability to separate. That's the thing that Kyle Shanahan really, really likes in his wide receivers.
Yeah.
He, on the red zone, he has scored multiple touchdowns in college at Washington with a really quick inside jab step and then fading out to the sideline. It's his ability to not allow the defensive back to get their hands on him at the line that makes him pretty special. The camp reports are already coming out that he's able to do this as well at the NFL level against cornerbacks like Akella Witherspoon, who's not a bad corner. So I think the Niners are going to have more red zone weapons this year, and I think that's going to make them an overall better red zone offense. But I think overall, when you think of what the team is able to do on offense, last year the team had to start from scratch. They're literally learning how to huddle, formations, tags, protections. That all takes time to learn. Well, now you've got a team in year two, and they know, at least the core of the team knows those things. Obviously, the rookies have to get up to speed on those things. So now they can spend less time on that, and they get to spend more time on things like cadence or specific, or get more fine-tuned in the way that you're dialing in the route running, or add more packages and more counters to the plays because you've got some of the basics down. So it's not just that they're already in year two and it's just going to be more of the same. You're going to see more things and more wrinkles get added on because they already have a stronger grasp of the fundamentals. And I think that's super exciting.
And then if on top of that, if you would have a lot less penalties in the red zone, which killed them from down and distance to start some of those red zone opportunities and run the ball better as well. So all those things combined, I absolutely agree they could be a lot better in the red zone. And Chris Wilson, who writes at LockedOn49ers.com, had an awesome article that pointed out how good the 49ers were on a yards per drive and a points per drive basis. And then when you factor in, they were tops in the league once Jimmy Garoppolo showed up, and they were bottom five in the league before that. And if you factor in all of those red zone opportunities that were field goals that could have been touchdowns, that could be skewed even further. And they were already way ahead with Jimmy Garoppolo. So, you know, Jimmy G year two with Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. Just it's an exciting time to be a 49ers fan after the weird run that the 49ers post Harbaugh era went on, that things are in the right direction. Looking forward to year two there. By the way, this is Oscar Aparicio joining me here on Locked On 49ers. He's the host of the Better Rivals podcast. I want to get into some specific fits with you here, players fitting into this offense and how things are going to look here in 2018. Let's start with Jerick McKinnon. I think the Jerick McKinnon signing came as a surprise to most people. You know, have you gotten into McKinnon's film from Minnesota, and how do you like the fit for the offense with Jerick McKinnon?
So the fit's absolutely perfect. We actually identified Jerick McKinnon as a potential free agent target beforehand, because we knew that the team was going to target a pass catching running back. That's the one thing that Kyle Shanahan always seemed to have on his roster, and the one thing that the 49ers just didn't have going into 2018. So we targeted a couple of running backs, or who we thought the team would target. Deion Lewis was atop that list. We thought that he would be the $7 million running back the Niners went after. But we thought, if you're not going to be able to get Deion Lewis, then who's the next best option? And David and I both thought Jerick McKinnon was going to be that next best option. So we weren't surprised at all when he was signed. We were a little surprised at the contract, but yeah. I think now you look at Todd Gurley's contract, and all of a sudden Jerick McKinnon doesn't look terribly expensive. And the way that the team has structured the contract, it really is a 2 or 3 year deal that they can pull the ripcord on, because we have Parag Marate, and he's awesome at negotiating contracts with outs for the team if we so need it. I actually think McKinnon is going to be the offensive player of the year, basically the non-quarterback that is best on the offense. Marquise Goodwin could get it because he's obviously, I think he's going to be that number one wide receiver over the course of the year, even if he doesn't have as many catches as Pierre Garçon. But I think Jerick McKinnon is going to be the real heartbeat of the offense. He is going to put up a lot of yards and a lot of receptions through the air, and he's already building a rapport with Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think his involvement in the offense is going to be varied, but I also think it's going to be a fantastic addition, because Kyle Shanahan embodies that West Coast sentiment that you don't ever really know where the offense is going to hit you, because every player on that offense is a threat. From tight end George Kittle to fullback Kyle Juszczyk to running back, it doesn't matter. Anyone's a threat to catch the ball. Anyone's a threat to gash you. And that's a Bill Walsh philosophy that I think that Kyle Shanahan embodies very well. And that's why I'm really, really excited about what McKinnon brings to the 49ers.
You know, another Bill Walsh philosophy that I think the team, and I think they kind of already have, but Bill Walsh always talked about how you are in control of the offense, so you decide where the ball goes. But on defense, you don't get to decide that. So you need to be strong everywhere. And having, like we said, a top 3-4 offensive mind running the show on offense for the 49ers, and, you know, enough talent, like good talent, you can spread the ball around. Like you said, multiple weapons on all levels of the offense. You can run the offense the way you want to, and then just spend resources on defense. Just build a monster on defense to make it difficult and let your guy in Kyle Shanahan run the show on offense. And I think that's the recipe long term for the 49ers' success. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that that's probably smart just based on who the Niners have as coach. Because we can see that the Niners don't need elite talent on offense in order to make their offense go. They need talent at certain key positions, the most important positions on offense, which are going to be your quarterback, of course, far and away, most important position in football and on offense. And then you've got tackles, and then you've got your center, because we know that Kyle Shanahan really values his center. He went out and got Alex Mack in Atlanta. He had him in Cleveland, and he went out and got Weston Richburg this offseason in San Francisco. So we know that he values tackles, and we know that he values his center. But after that, everyone's like, oh, you need a number one wide receiver. You need a number one wide receiver. Well, last year, we didn't have that true number one. Why? Because Kyle Shanahan understands that a wide receiving core is better than the sum, or it's some of the parts is better than just a true number one. He wants a shifty slot guy like Trent Taylor, who has really, really good short area quickness. He wants a big possession receiver like Pierre Garçon, who's got incredible hands and has a phenomenal catch rate. I think last year he had the best catch rate by Pro Football Focus's standards because he didn't drop but maybe one ball, if that. And that was, of course, over 8 games because he was injured. And then you need your speedster. You need the guy who's going to be able to stretch the field and take the top off of defenses, and that's Marquise Goodwin. And you put all those three things together, and scheme can identify where you attack the defense, just like you said. And so you don't need a Julio Jones. It's great if you have one, and we would love to have one, sure. But you don't need one. You don't need, you know, a Todd Gurley. You can get by with a Jerick McKinnon, who is arguably not as talented, but I think will be just as effective because of his ability to catch the football. So I think that's exactly right. I think scheme can overcome some talent deficiencies, especially because you can attack defensive points and defensive weaknesses. But I think talent really wins games on defense more so than scheme.
You mentioned the offensive line and some upgrades there. Weston Richburg, McGlinchey, whatever happens at right guard. I mentioned earlier in the red zone, being able to run the ball will help a lot there. And just being a better team running the ball anyways will benefit. McGlinchey, I think, is going to be a little bit of a work as a pass blocker right out of the gate. I think it's going to be pretty obvious. He might not be as good as Trent Brown was, but he's got potential to be very good as a pass blocker as well. But as a run blocker, he's already going to be a lot better just because he can move and work in the scheme better. You mentioned Weston Richburg and why he's an awesome fit. Do you like the upgrades they made in the offensive line? Did they do enough there?
So when you think of the offensive line really just needs to get to competence. And I think the 49ers are able to do that along the offensive line pretty much immediately. And a lot of that's going to be at the shoulders of Jimmy Garoppolo. When you look at the 49ers' best offensive grades from PFF over the course of the season last year, they were all in the last 5 or 6 games, and I don't think that's a coincidence. It's not a coincidence because you're able to have a quarterback that lifts everyone up and makes things a little easier for you. And so I think that the Niners are, we know Joe Staley is going to be great. We know that Laken Tomlinson works well enough with Joe Staley that that's a competent pairing. Weston Richburg in his last healthy season was the top graded center in football. And that's his peak. And even if he doesn't get to his peak, even if he gets to, you know, 80% of his peak, that's still a top 10 center. And that's much better and an upgrade than we had last year. And then I think with guards, you only need average guard play. And I think that somewhere between Cooper and Person and maybe Garnett, if he can stay healthy, I think you have average guard play there. And then McGlinchey, I think you're exactly right. Probably going to start out a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker, but he has all the tools to be a good pass blocker. So I think that offensive line is going to be fine. If the team fails on offense next year, I don't think it will be necessarily because of the offensive line. I think it'll be because Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't succeed, and it's because, you know, he has a dip. He regresses to the mean. He's not as good as everyone thought he was. There's lots of reasons why. I mean, his sample size is still fairly small. It's exciting, and the things that he's good at bode well for his projection to the future, because we know that your performance in a clean pocket is the most predictive stat for a quarterback year to year because it's the most stable, and that's the one area where he excels. So that's good, but it's by no means a given. I mean, when you look at the quarterbacks that have started out that hot, you're looking at an illustrious list of players like Colin Kaepernick, Tim Rattay, Mark Bulger, Paul Justin, Elvis Gerback, Steve Bono. These are all players that had fantastic DVOA as individual passers from like pass 120 to pass 250, which is about where Jimmy Garoppolo is. And not all their careers turned out great. Now, they were all later on picks, so there's, you know, there's some caveats there. But the book is not written on Jimmy Garoppolo. And if the offense is going to sputter, it's because Jimmy Garoppolo sputters.
A lot of 49ers on that list, by the way.
Which is weird, right? It's super weird. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, Tim Rattay, Elvis Gerback, Steve Bono. That there is definitely something there in San Francisco when it comes to quarterbacking and getting them off to a hot start. And I think it has to do with, you know, the coaches and the types of coaches right. that we've had, because I mean, Steve Bono, Elvis Gerback,
right.
those were West Coast system. They were under Seifert, but it was still very much Bill Walsh's offensive system. Colin Kaepernick was, of course, Jim Harbaugh, who was a West Coast guy. And now you've got Jimmy Garoppolo, another West Coast guy. I mean, there's a trend there is all I'm saying.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, the McGlinchey and Joe Staley show is going to be a fun ride for as long as Joe Staley's around, because that's like an awesome pairing. Absolutely. Unreal. Even fans of other teams, they're on NFL Network the other day, and there was people from it was like the guy, the host of Locked On Chiefs was like, oh, my God, these guys should have their own show. And, you know, he just had seen that interaction for the first time. It's like that could take over the NFL world, or give them just a half an hour a week. It's all they would need.
Did you see the Steve Smith clip on NFL Network?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that was amazing. Unreal.
It was so good. Oh, man. I loved it, man. It was funny. He couldn't talk to Joe, and they kept saying, like, hey, why don't you tell Joe?
And their ability to make Steve Smith sound good was the amazing part to me.
Yeah, it was good. I knew it was going to go south when he was like, I swear to Hades. He tried to replace – like damn, I think with Hades, was trying not to swear, and I was like, oh, geez.
yeah, that's good stuff, man. You are listening to Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local daily sports podcast network. If you would like to advertise with us and reach thousands of loyal 49ers and NFL fans, local and national sponsorships are available. Email lockedon49ers@gmail.com. Oscar, I got to talk to you about something very important here. I've seen it various times. You post rules to a better rivals drinking game. How do you possibly replace the volume of Vance McDonald dropped passes in such a game?
Oh, man, that's a good question. We could open it up to more broad NFL things, like every time the helmet rule is called in a game, go ahead and drink. You know, it was called three times. I stopped watching the preseason bonanza about half an hour ago, but that we'd already seen three calls. Two of them actually were not bad calls. One of them, the last one in the end zone, was a terrible call.
That's going to make me want to drink anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a good one. You know, once we see the Niners play in the preseason, I think we'll get a better handle on what some of the kind of trends are going to be that we might want to drink ourselves into a stupor about. So I don't know. We'll see. I think we'll let the season come to us when it comes to those drinking games, because the drinking game will live on. It's an exciting part of the season opener, and I'm excited to revamp it for 2018.
I think I'm going to get real tired of mentions of other football teams, particularly the Patriots and Belichick and Brady during 49ers games.
Yeah, I think that was one last year. We updated it after Jimmy got some starts, and so we updated that. I think I think Marquise Goodwin is gonna feature prominently on the drinking game at some point. Last year it was about his track speed mentions.
Olympic speed.
Yeah, I think this year it's gonna be something a little bit different. But there's no one really that drops a ton of passes. So you know it's gonna be. I think it'll be. We'll think of some good ones. But if you have any suggestions, definitely tweet them at me. You can tweet me at Better Rivals, and we'll see if that rule makes the drinking game this year.
And by the way, Mitch, and I've talked about it on the show too, about Kyle Shanahan definitely having a type with receivers, you know, guys who can separate, and he's not really hung up on size as much as he wants guys to separate. He also likes guys with hands, which is nice for once for 49ers.
I mean, if you think about it, sometimes and football can be a very, very complicated game, but I think the best leaders, the best, you know, coaches, the best people at their jobs are the people who are very good at distilling and identifying the base parts of what they have to do and figuring out that thing and then going out and getting it. And when you think about wide receivers, what is being a wide receiver really? It is being able to separate from the dude who's covering you and catching the football. And if you can do those two things, chances are you're going to be okay as a wide receiver. And those receivers come big, small, fast, slow, whatever. But if you can separate and you can catch the ball, you're gonna have, you know, some skills at the wide receiver position. And I think that's what Kyle Shanahan's done. He's reduced wide receiving to its two most elemental parts, and those are the types of guys he goes after, and I think that's why he ends up finding wide receivers that are successful.
And a little bit of edge of that toughness too, which is, by the way, might be the thing that gets Trent Taylor killed at 5'8 and 180 pounds or whatever he is. He's too
five
tough for his own good. Yeah, exactly. 5'7" and a half. But he's gonna get himself killed inside the trees. He's just, and so I'm worried for his safety, but I love watching him play.
I do too, because he's basically me with an extra 25 pounds. And my joke is always that I've got bigger hands than Trent Taylor, so I don't know how he catches the Duke, the football. Because, I mean, NFL footballs are not small for a guy my size.
Right.
And he does it with an amazing, amazing ability to catch the ball. I think his catch rate at Louisiana, his school in Louisiana was 99.6%. He had like two drops over his entire career or something. Or his senior year. It was stupid. But he's good, man. I like him a lot. And I know he's had some concussions last year, but that's why I think Richie James, the late round draft pick for the 49ers, is a bit of Trent Taylor insurance.
Yeah, that's my guy. He's one of the guys I had mocked to the 49ers. And like you mentioned before about having that Kyle Shanahan type, I was like, I bet they're going to really like Richie James. And I just saw a comparison recently to Richie James's stats from college versus Antonio Brown's stats from college. And actually, I had Richie James here on the podcast and interviewed him and asked him about some of those comparisons, because he gets compared to him a lot. You know, late round pick, super high production for a small college level, and the type of skill set he has. And he said he's heard that a lot, but he's a really good guy. He's got some toughness. He's going to work hard. I really think Richie James is going to stick. I'm excited to watch him, and he just fits right in with that mold of Trent Taylor and Dante Pettis. None of these guys are big. They might all have to get filtered in if they take too much of a pounding. All three of their top receivers were all hurt by the end of last year, in Taylor, Goodwin, and obviously Pierre Garçon, who missed half the year. So that's something to worry about with the smaller bodied guys. But they're going to get open, and they're going to be productive. It's going to be fun to watch.
In my super early roster projection, I've got Richie James making the roster as a sixth wide receiver. I do think that he provides some Trent Taylor insurance. I think that Dante Pettis is versatile enough to play all three positions, whether it be slot or either outside position. So he's going to be the primary backup. And then I think you've got Trent Taylor and Richie James. And I think Kendrick Bourne makes the roster as well. And I think that's the complementary core. The wild card is going to be Aaron Burbridge, because he is very, very good on special teams. And so the gamble the team is going to need to make is, do we value what Burbridge can do as a special teamer, knowing that he's probably not as good as a receiver and that his receiving skills are redundant to probably Kendrick Bourne and Dante Pettis. And he's like a lesser version than those two wide receivers, but we're okay with that because of what he does on special teams. Or are we going to treat this wide receiving core as a true wide receiving core? I don't know. That's going to be a tough question, but the 49ers luckily are no longer in the roster shape where those decisions are easy. When your roster is good, you've got to make some tough roster decisions at the bottom, and the people that you cut are usually good enough to make the team elsewhere. And I think that's where the Niners find themselves at the wide receiver position, because at this point, it's a strength.
Absolutely. One more quick question for you here, Oscar. How surprised were you that the 49ers didn't add an outside pass rusher in the draft? I really feel like that's the last like piece that is a very important piece to football and to defenses, that the 49ers are sort of just like, I think we're okay there. And I was sort of surprised that they didn't attack that position harder.
You know, I'm going to go like full dad mode on the Niners right now. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Right.
Like, that's really what it is. Honestly, it was a terrible year to be in the need for an edge player. There just weren't very many available. This was one of the worst edge draft classes in recent memory. There were only really two edge players worth a damn. And the one player I thought the Niners could target, Harold Landry, he ended up going a few spots before Dante Pettis. And I think the Niners had their eyeballs on Dante Pettis in the second round the whole way. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Landry would have been an option there. And that was it. And Landry would have been a gamble, right? He's no sure thing. So I totally get it. The Niners think Atauchu is an upgrade to Doomerville. I don't think that's the case, but it may end up being a wash. They think that they've got players that can pressure from the edge, Cassius Marsh among them. I don't know that that'll be the case, but I also don't think that it would have been wise to just throw a lot of money at an edge rusher just because you need one. So I think the team showed appropriate restraint, even though I wish that they would have made a move for someone like Junior Gallette, who comes, of course, with a bunch of red flags because he likes to belt whip people on beaches. But he was an effective pass rusher last year. He would have been a veteran presence. He would have been this year's Elvis Doomerville. I think the team just really wanted to develop and have a young, talented edge rusher that grew with the team. And I think that that's what they hope Atauchu is on that one-year flyer. And I just don't know that this was a good year for edge, and the Niners played it appropriately.
Well, the latest thing in the news is Khalil Mack, and that the Raiders are actually dumb enough to possibly be thinking about a trade and don't want to sign him long term. I don't think it would actually ever happen. But if it did, how many first round picks are you ready to throw at Khalil Mack?
Oh man, that's a tough one. That's tough. I think I probably would put some feelers out there. I think edge rusher is, especially an edge rusher at his level, is one of the more important positions in football. I would put it probably somewhere after an elite corner or an elite safety, depending on the kind of defense that you play, just because I do think coverage is a little bit more important than rushing the passer. But they work in tandem. They don't work in vacuums. So I don't know, man. They'd probably want a king's ransom. I'd probably do like a first and maybe something else the next year, maybe a third rounder that gets, you know, moved up if Mac kind of balls out of his mind. Who the hell knows? But it's something that I think maybe they explore. Maybe they want C.J. Beathard. Who knows? Maybe they need a backup to Derek Carr. but yeah, I think it's an interesting scenario. I don't think it happens. I don't think the team is going to let him go. I don't think they should let him go. You don't let someone that talented at a position of value go. But hey, you know, it doesn't hurt to throw a flyer out there because maybe they jump on it.
Yeah, make the call. I highly doubt they would do that. That just doesn't make any sense at all. But you
know, what's been the trade value of other what's another elite pass rusher that has been traded? Like what's a comp? I can't really think of any.
You got to go back to like Charles Haley, right?
Yeah, and even but that's like almost that's so far that it's almost not comparable.
Right, it's not comparable at all. But look how that turned out.
It turned out just fine. It really did. I don't know that pass rushers move on in today's NFL like they did.
No, and they don't even get to free agency. That's the thing, is you sign them. When you have that player, you sign him, and that's the end of the story.
That's how the Ravens ended up with Joe Flacco, right? It's edge rusher is a little bit like quarterback. It's if they're above the Dalton line, you just sign them, and you know it's going to be $20 million a year, and that's that.
Yeah, exactly. And then in 8 years, you're like, oh well, this doesn't look as bad as it did back then, and then you move on.
Yeah, I really can't think of one, because even like a just an above average pass rusher like Ezekiel Ansah, who I don't think is super awesome, but he's definitely an above average athlete. Even he didn't get let go from Detroit because they were like, yeah, you know what? We got him. We probably should keep him.
Right.
And so, yeah, I can't think of one that is comparable. So, yeah, I don't think he leaves. I don't think he goes.
I totally agree. There's no way he goes. But if he does, yeah, make that call. Why not? All right. We're pretty much out of time. I got to let you go here, Oscar. Thank you so much for joining the show. You guys can find Oscar's podcast, Better Rivals, and he's going to be one more episode with David Newman. Is David Newman going to ever come back? He'll come back like as a guest sometime, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's just not going to be the official co-host, but he'll come back. He's going to be enshrined in the Better Rivals Hall of Fame. There's actually two former co-hosts now in the Better Rivals Hall of Fame, Richard and now David, and he'll come back and do some guest spots, and so he'll still be around, but I will have a different co-host come season.
What kind of great job did Richard leave for?
Richard actually went to go become a filmmaker in the Bay Area. So he now does promo, all the videos you see on Kickstarter of like, hey, buy this amazing thing that's going to take you 2 years to get and may or may not be functional. he makes all of those videos for startups in the Bay Area. And he does fairly well. He's got a video that's looped in the Apple store for a Bluetooth enabled helmet. That had like a bike helmet that links to your Apple Watch. So when you do turn signals with your hands, like the proper turn signals, it actually puts blinkers on your helmet, which is a phenomenal idea. And it's in the Apple Store right now, and wow, it's on the loop and stuff like that. So he's doing great. He lives in Oakland. He loves it out there.
Great idea. Completely unnecessary, but it's awesome that the technology has taken us here.
Yeah, I've been almost sideswiped by a car or two, so I would go ahead and say that it may not be necessary, but if you've ever ridden on a bike on a street, it doesn't hurt to have an extra little, hey, I'm riding my bike over here, dude, up on your helmet.
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely. Riding the bike in the city like I do sometimes. It's wild out there.
Yeah.
All right. Oscar, thank you so much for joining the show. You can find him. The podcast is on what? It's on SoundCloud. You can find it at NinersNation.com, correct?
If you've got the internet, you can find this podcast.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hard to find.
It's on Stitcher, it's on iTunes, it's on Google Play, it's on SoundCloud. Pretty much the only thing it's not on is like a record player. So just search the Better Rivals podcast and you should be able to find it.
That's our next Kickstarter.
Oh, podcast, dude, let's do
the record player.
I'm going to connect a record player that only plays podcasts that connects through your Sonos that's controlled by Alexa.
Yeah, each side of the record only plays one specific podcast.
That's exactly right. Actually, it plays half of one podcast. You have to turn it over in the middle of the podcast. Launch date, 2024.
You and I can do a split 7-inch.
Yeah, let's do it.
And you can find Oscar on Twitter at BetArrivals. Oscar, thank you so much. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
That's going to do it. Thanks again to Oscar for joining the program. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.